Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Exxon, Chevron to ramp up output. Oil giants will boost Permian Basin production to meet energy demand. By Kevin Crowley, Sheila Tobin, and David Weth from Bloomberg. President Joe Biden, who has asked OPEC Plus to raise oil production faster to tame runaway energy prices, just got a gift on his home turf instead. A blockbuster growth forecast for U.S. shale production from the country's two biggest oil companies. ExxonMobil Corporation said Tuesday it plans to boost output by 25% this year in the Permian Basin, the biggest U.S. oil-producing region. That comes 4 days after Chevron announced it will ramp up its own Permian supplies by 10% from an even larger production base. Such aggressive targets from the Western world's largest oil majors are a surefire sign that U.S. shale is back to growth mode after cuts in 2020 and a lackluster 2021. With oil trading near its highest since 2014 and inflation raging across developed world economies, extra supply from the U.S., or anywhere else for that matter, would be welcomed by the Biden administration. But resurgent domestic output brings its own dangers. Recent history has shown that too much shale production can quickly overwhelm worldwide demand. It also risks upsetting members of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and the group's allies, who have crashed the market twice in the past 8 years through damaging price wars in response to U.S. shale growth. Still, for now, global supplies remain tight. OPEC on its own can't pump more to meet rising demand, and so U.S. supply growth is needed, said Aaron Brady, executive director for IHS Market. What Exxon and Chevron's plans reveal is that U.S. producers are going to be able to manage dual objectives in 2022, he said. They'll be able to return record cash to investors and also grow volumes to help meet fast-recovering world oil demand. Even before the latest production announcements, analysts were expecting big growth in 2022. The Energy Information Administration said on January 11th that the U.S. will end the year producing about 12.2 million barrels of oil a day, 630,000 barrels a day more than current levels and higher than Saudi Arabia's current output. And that's a more conservative forecast than others. ConocoPhillips' Chief Executive Officer Ryan Lance, for instance, said last week that U.S. crude output may grow by 800,000 barrels a day this year. U.S. shale could surprise the market on the upside on production growth this year, said Artem Abramov, an analyst at Rystad Energy. Publicly traded independents such as Pioneer Natural Resources Co., EOG Resources Inc., Diamondback Energy Inc., all are well aware of the risks of growing too fast and have so far indicated supply increases of no more than 5% this year. Investors will be watching their forecasts closely over the next few weeks as they report earnings and reveal more details about their 2022 plans. But the U.S. majors don't think their Permian expansion plans buck the production discipline trend that's become a mantra among energy investors. That's because much of their growth in the U.S. will be offset by naturally declining fields elsewhere in their global portfolios. Independent operators, by contrast, don't have such offsets, meaning their growing supply flows directly into the market. Exxon's 25% production increase will be high-value growth and comes on top of the 460,000 barrels of oil equivalent produced from the Permian Basin last year, CEO Darren Woods said on a call with analysts on Tuesday. Chevron, which produced an average of 608,000 barrels a day from the basin in 2021, also indicated that its Permian barrels are some of the most profitable anywhere in its global portfolio. Exxon and Chevron are resuming the ambitious growth plans of 3 to 4 years ago that were delayed by the pandemic, Rystad's Abramoff said. And with more shale production now concentrated into fewer hands after a series of mergers over the past 2 years, Exxon and Chevron will account for more of the forward growth profile than they did historically, said Stephen Richardson at Evercore. Still, while the extra barrels may help to balance out some of the surging oil consumption as economies bounce back from COVID-19, they may not be enough to bring about a substantial reduction in prices. This article is entitled "Reservoir Can Elevate Quality of City Water," by Stuart Doreen. Peggy Sue is apparently more than a Buddy Holly song. Anyone familiar with City of Midland water operations knows this. They know Peggy Sue is a 95-million-gallon reservoir in northwest Midland. And if Carl Crago, City of Midland Utilities Director, is correct, Peggy Sue will be key to better quality and better-tasting water for residents. Talking to Crago, the Peggy Sue Reservoir will fill two roles moving forward. But before moving to the end result, one must be familiar with the current operations. First, the city is contracted to take 16.5 million gallons of Colorado Municipal Water District water. It does, and that water is piped into the water treatment facility and sent out to residents. Crago wants to build a pipeline from the treatment center to Peggy Sue to blend water that the city has delivered from OH Ivy Reservoir. Crago said doing this allows the city to change its treatment process, provide a much better disinfectant, and help with taste and odor. Such a move also would mean that once a year, or once every 2 years, chlorine conversions would become even less frequent. To do this would require two phases: the pipeline and a chlorine dioxide study. Crago said the money has been set aside for both, and last week the City Council agreed that the repurposing and relining of the Peggy Sue Reservoir was a 2022 priority. The rerouting of water also will help Midland with its emergency water storage, Crago said. Keeping Peggy Sue full and adding that to the 15 million gallons at the city's treatment center will allow for 110 million gallons of emergency storage if the situation arises. The city averages distributing 19 million gallons of water a day, 13 million during the winter. Note, the Peggy Sue name was for a former longtime administrative assistant in the city's utilities department. This article is entitled "Governor: Protecting Energy Industry Spurs Re-Election Bid," by Mella McEwen. For coverage of the gubernatorial and attorney general forums, visit MRT.com and see future editions of the Midland Reporter Telegram. Governor Greg Abbott brought his race for re-election to Midland Tuesday for an event accepting the endorsements of several oil and gas associations. "The reason I'm running for re-election is to ensure the security of Texas oil and gas," he told the gathering at 3S Services on Elkins Road in East Midland. In addition to the endorsement from 3S Services, Jason Modglin, president of Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, Thur Cannon, president of the Texas Pipeline Association, and Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, also offered their endorsements of the incumbent governor. Abbott said the industry associations and their members fuel Texas and fuel the U.S. "What they do every single day to produce energy and provide energy makes Texas better every day." He noted that Texas has led the nation as the top state for business and to do business in every year he has served as governor. "In fact," he said, "over the last 2 years, the state's economy has advanced from 10th largest in the world to 9th largest in the world, overtaking Brazil." As we gather in Midland today, more Texans have a job than in the entire history of our great state, he said. There's a direct connection between that and what the oil and gas industry does. Nationwide, the industry employs millions in high-paying jobs that have made the state and the nation energy independent, Abbott said. And he vowed Texas, quote, will not allow leftists to destroy the energy sector by crushing the high-paying jobs in Midland and Odessa. No matter the headwinds against the industry from federal regulators, Abbott continued, we should be proud of the work we do, the producers we provide, and the energy we provide that powers the economy. With clouds gathering in advance of a major winter storm due to blow through Texas Wednesday and Thursday, Abbott fielded questions about the readiness of the state's power grid in the aftermath of last year's winter storm Uri. He noted that he had signed 12 laws to strengthen the grid after last year's legislative session, including requiring winterization of infrastructure. Approximately 99% of all power generation facilities had passed winterization inspections, he said. A number of power generators have installed alternative sources of power, he added. In addition, far more natural gas facilities have been designated as critical infrastructure than last year. That means, he said, that the Energy Reliability Council of Texas won't cut off power to natural gas processing plants and other infrastructure as it did last February. Another development is the availability of additional power, he said. My guess is the grid is expecting peak demand in the early morning hours Friday, he said. There's 13,000 megawatts more power that will be available at peak demand. One thing that could help expand the state's power generation capacity could be Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, Abbott said. He explained that they won't help fuel the grid, but the rising and ongoing demand for electricity coming from Bitcoin mining could incentivize companies to build new power generation facilities. This is the Region page. This article is entitled, State Power Prices Surge as Cold Snap Looms, by Noreen S. Malik, Brian K. Sullivan, and Shelley Hagen, Bloomberg. Texas electricity prices surged for Friday when demand is forecast to hit a winter record in the biggest test since extreme cold and blackouts killed hundreds almost a year ago. Demand on the grid operated by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, or ERCOT, is forecast to peak at 71,242 megawatts on February 4th morning, a level that has never been seen outside the summer season before. In February 2021, demand was poised to climb to an all-time high before widespread outages darkened the second-largest U.S. state for days. Memory of that crisis created a fear premium for coming days, when a deep chill is expected to descend on Texas, according to several traders. On-peak power for ERCOT's North Hub, which includes Dallas, closed at $800 for February 4th on the Intercontinental Exchange after topping $1,000 in Monday trading, traders said. By comparison, Wednesday power fetched $60 and Thursday almost $560, a trader said. A massive storm set to sweep the central U.S. has left nearly two-thirds of Texas under winter storm watches and weather advisories, as temperatures are set to plummet from highs in the upper 60s Fahrenheit on Tuesday to 14 degrees in Dallas Thursday night and 10 degrees in Midland. A wide area of Texas, including Dallas and Fort Worth, are expected to get a mix of ice and snow, the National Weather Service said. This is the strongest cold event so far this winter, but not nearly as cold as last winter, said Matt Rogers, president of the Commodity Weather Group. However, the Lone Star State still faces challenges later this week, such as icing on turbines and snow and sleet that could impede solar generation, he said. Overall temperatures could run about 25 to 30 degrees below normal in some places, although the cold snap will only last 2 to 3 days, whereas a year ago it lingered much longer. Dallas should bottom out at 13 Fahrenheit, which is well below normal, but not last year's minus 2 Fahrenheit, Rogers said. ERCOT is well prepared for the conditions as they currently stand, though the grid operator remains flexible to respond to power demand needs, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, 64, said during a Tuesday press conference in Austin. ERCOT will have an excess of 15,000 megawatts of power available even at the time of highest demand, he said. ERCOT has become aware that some generators running on natural gas may see fuel constraints in frigid conditions, which could affect 1,200 to 2,600 megawatts of capacity, Interim Chief Executive Officer Brad Jones said at the Austin briefing. ERCOT is making sure that the plants with dual fuel capabilities can run on alternative fuels or tap other pipelines if they are available, Jones said. A plunge in gas flows to power plants contributed to cascading failures in Texas a year ago that triggered widespread blackouts. Abbott also spoke of steps taken by the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the state's oil and gas industry, to ensure there will be enough gas so that much of what happened last year has been corrected. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, February 2nd. Colonel Harry Alvin Spanhouse. Colonel Harry Alvin Spanhouse was born in Hutchinson, Minnesota on September 1, 1930. Colonel Spanhouse was preceded in death by his wife Mary of 41 years in 1994. He is survived by his daughters Terry Dunn, Tim, Kathy Prescott Glenn, and one son Mark Spanhouse, Jill. He has 10 grandchildren and 25 great-grandchildren. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. Friday, February 4th at Dally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Services will be at First Presbyterian Church of Midland on February 5th at 3 p.m. The family requested that in lieu of flowers, memorials be sent to the Mary Spanhouse Medical Education Memorial Fund of the PBAF, First Presbyterian Church of Midland, Hospice of Midland, or Manor Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Juanita Steigen. Juanita Faye Witt Steigen, 85, passed away January 30th in Kerrville, Texas, surrounded by loving family. Graveside services will be Thursday, February 3rd at 1 p.m. at Rest Haven Cemetery. Juanita will be laid to rest alongside her husband of 66 years, Charles Rodney Steigen. Juanita was born on February 18, 1936, in Big Spring, to P.E. and Gita Witt. She was preceded in death by her husband Charles, son Charlie Jr., sister Helen Reeves, and parents Gita and P.E. Witt. She is survived by daughters Terry Edbiston and husband Mac of Kerrville, and Susan Benner of Midland. 4 grandchildren, 6 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the American Cancer Society. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Ralph Lacey Way. Ralph Lacey Way went to be with his Lord and Savior at the age of 85 on January 27th at his home in Midland. Ralph was born October 23, 1936, in Texon, Texas, to Lacey Dan and Doris Pembroke Way. He is preceded in death by his parents, wife Ann McCabe Way, sister Linda Way, and brother Richard Way. He is survived by his 5 daughters, Karen Davis and husband Rick, Carol Ann Eads and husband Rusty, Catherine Jackson and husband Rick, Christy Jones and husband Rob, Kimberly Montgomery and husband Ben. He is adored by his 16 grandchildren and 13 great-grandchildren, and his sister Ann Schneeman and husband Bill, and a host of nieces and nephews. Ralph is preceded in death by Anne's son, Jerry McCabe, and survived by Anne's son, Mike McCabe and wife Diana, Terry McCabe and wife Anna, Todd McCabe, Yvette McCabe, wife of Jerry McCabe, and Anne's many grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A memorial service celebrating Ralph's life will be held at First United Methodist Church on February 5th at 10 a.m., preceded by the graveside at Rest Haven Cemetery at 9 o'clock. Donations to honor his memory, if desired, may be made to Texas Tech Foundation, Texas Tech University System Financial Services, Box 45025, Lubbock, 79409, or the Midland College Foundation, or Hospice of Midland, or the charity of your choice. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Sarah Williams. Sarah Jane Williams Harrell, affectionately known as Nani, blessed the world with her presence April 8, 1942. She joined up with Jesus on January 26, 2022. She is preceded in death by her husband of 52 years, Roy C. Williams, parents Woody and Imogene Harrell, brother Frank Dale, sister Delia Sue, her papa, Troy Roberts, as well as many uncles, nieces, and nephews, and one grandson, Michael Duane Williams. Those left to cherish her love and memory are her daughter, Sheila Williams, as well as her grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. A viewing will be offered at Ellis Funeral Home Tuesday, February 1st at 6 p.m., and memorial services will be at True Light Christian Fellowship Wednesday, February 2nd at 10 a.m. with Pastor Roy Smith and her best friend Debbie Huff officiating, followed by burial at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Sheila Martin. Sheila Jo Martin Prescott passed away on Sunday, January 30th. A celebration of life will begin at 10 a.m. on February 4th at the branch at NPW. Sheila was born on July 11, 1954 in El Paso, Texas, to Eddie Joe Prescott and James Allen Prescott. She grew up in Snyder and later moved to Midland. Sheila is survived by her brother Glenn Prescott and wife Kathy, children Melissa Evans, husband James, Michelle Maldonado, husband Jerry, Shade Martin and wife Morgan, as well as multiple grandchildren and great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, grandparents, and numerous aunts and uncles. The family would like to express their gratitude toward all family and friends for their generous support. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Willie James Taylor. Willie James Taylor was born to Lily May and Leonard Taylor on December 19, 1936, in Cost, Texas. Willie departed this life January 27th. He is preceded in death by his parents, Lily May and Leonard Taylor, three brothers, Henry Lee Taylor, Leonard Taylor Jr., and Milton Taylor, two sisters, Isla Ruth Taylor and Doris Ransom. Willie Taylor is survived by 4 daughters, Brenda Taylor Daniels, Bill, Becky Taylor, Glenda Taylor, Donya Nix, Bruce, and 2 sons, Willie James Taylor Jr. and Billy Taylor, Lynn, 18 grandchildren, 27 great-grandchildren, and 8 great-great-grandchildren, as well as a host of nieces and nephews. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, February 3rd, at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 12 p.m. Friday, February 4th, at Nellie Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Clayton Smith. It is with deep sorrow and much love that we mourn the passing of Clayton Ward Smith. Clayton, 37, was called home Monday, January 24th. Clay was born on June 23, 1984, in Midland. Clay is survived by his wife, Jennifer Smith, parents Rodney and Cindy Smith, siblings Mandy and Sean Piercy, and Stephanie and Jason Womack, as well as nieces Emma Piercy and Danica Womack, Meemaw Charlene Felton, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. He is preceded in death by his grandparents, Billy and Tom Neetert, Peepaw Bill Smith, nephew Cameron Harrow, and cousin Dakota Busby. In Clay's honor, should you feel led to make a donation, please consider the Southwest Transplant Alliance Foundation or UT Southwestern Medical Center. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Friday, February 4th at the branch at NPW. A celebration of his life will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 5th at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, February 2nd, 2022. Barrientos Dancing and Dining this year. Curbside Bistro to be featured on television once again by Michael Bauer. Chef Alejandro Barrientos is used to a busy life. From running his own restaurant, Curbside Bistro, with the help of his family, to being involved with the community, including the annual Thanksgiving free meals, Barrientos has remained pretty active. These last 12 months, Curbside Bistro has been recognized on television and will soon be back in the spotlight. This month, the restaurant will be featured on the television show, The Texas Bucket List. The show, which is in its 18th season, is hosted by Shane McAuliffe, who tours across the state of Texas, going to unique places, interviewing different people, and sharing their stories. Everything is highlighted on the show, from the Old West to modern marvels, and different restaurants have been featured as well. "It's amazing," Barrientos said. "The show's been around forever, so I've always seen it in some of the food that's on there, and I would always be amazed by the other chefs. It's just an amazing accomplishment." Last April, Barrientos and Curbside Bistro were in the spotlight when the restaurant owner was featured on an episode of the Food Network's Beat Bobby Flay, a show where chefs around the world compete against each other for a chance to go up against Iron Chef Bobby Flay. "The main difference is that we have two different audiences," Barrientos said. "A lot of people may not watch Bobby Flay or the Food Network, but the Texas Bucket List is so focused on a region. It's an honor to be on that show and highlight this region. There are so many good restaurants in the Midland and Odessa area that are mom-and-pop shops, and they choose us, so we're extremely humbled and honored. That's probably one of the main differences." Curbside Bistro will be featured on the Texas Bucket List on February 12th at 11 a.m. on CBS and at 12:30 p.m. Sundays on MyTV. Unsurprisingly, Barrientos says the exposure has been great for business for Curbside Bistro, but he also added that people have drawn inspiration from his business. "It's been amazing," Barrientos said. "Every time we get featured on TV or in an article, we do see an uptake in business. But we also see people that come and say, 'Hey, you inspired me to open up my own food restaurant.' That's the biggest thing. People might be on the edge of opening a restaurant, but need more reassurances, and they talk to me and think, 'If this guy can do it, I can do it.'" Filming for the Texas Bucket List for Curbside Bistro took place last May, just 1 month after Barrientos was featured on Beat Bobby Flay. Barry and Doe said the filming crew was around the Permian Basin area for about a week. What's crazy is that we asked him if we could post on Facebook that he would be here because he came during the hours when we weren't busy. And it was on a Saturday, so you can have customers talk to him, and we did that. Barriento said some people couldn't believe it. They didn't think he would be here, but we had a packed restaurant when he showed up. What was cool was that we had some of our regulars that came in that day, and they interviewed him, and it was really cool. Not only does In the Spotlight help his business, but Barrientos also hopes that it puts another small restaurant in the area in the limelight. When some people talk about Odessa, they don't really talk much about the food, but we want to showcase that. We have some good restaurants, Barrientos said. We have some really cool spots. We don't necessarily have to go to the bigger cities to have a nice restaurant. That's not the only thing Barrientos will be featured in. This month, he will also be taking part in the Dancing with the West Texas Stars, which is put on by the Crisis Center of West Texas. Each year, 11 local stars are partnered with professional dancers from the community in an event that raises money for the Crisis Center and has been going on for 7 years now. I like to dance, Barriento said. We've always been a big supporter of the Crisis Center and helped out with their drives. They reached out to me and asked if I could be there for this opportunity, and I couldn't say no, so here we are. He will be partnered up with Kelsey Tanner. The event will take place at 6:30 p.m. Saturday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Abbott picks up Energy Endorsements by Michael Bauer. Midland, Texas. Governor Greg Abbott returned to the Permian Basin Tuesday, where he picked up 5 endorsements from the state's energy industry. The endorsements were announced during an event hosted by 3S Services in Midland. High-ranking members from the Texas energy industries were presented as they announced their backing of the governor, who is seeking a third term with this year's gubernatorial election campaign in full swing. The primaries will be held on March 1st, and early voting will begin on February 14th. We're delighted to be here, Texas Oil and Gas Association President Tom Staples said. There's a reason why Midland in the Permian Basin is the energy capital of the world, and it's because of all the men and women here today that work hard every day to do their best to make Texas the number one state in the nation in the production of oil and natural gas. Staples touted the state's high ranking for job growth, crediting the people in the oil and gas industries and Abbott's policies as governor. We have a governor that is pro-business, pro-oil and gas, and pro-jobs, Staples said. There's a reason that Texas continues to rank number one in the country for job growth, and it's because of the men and women and the jobs that you do and the leaders like Abbott who understands that we can protect our environment and protect our economy at the same time. And I'm proud to announce that the Texas Oil and Gas Association Good Government Committee is proud to endorse Greg Abbott for 4 more years. Other people who spoke at the event included Texas Alliance of Energy Producers President Jason Monglin and Texas Pipeline President Thurl Cannon. Abbott thanked the organizations for their endorsements. This is the roundhouse of the energy sector of the entire state of Texas, Abbott said. These associations and their members fuel the state of Texas and fuel the United States of America. I thank them for what they do every day to provide and help make Texas a better state. Abbott was first elected governor in 2014, defeating Wendy Davis before getting reelected in 2018 over Lupe Valdez. He is currently trying to seek the Republican nomination with Alan West, Donald Huffins, and Daniel Harrison also running. Democratic Beto O'Rourke is seeking his party's nomination as the Democrats attempt to win the Texas governor's race for the first time since 1990. In large part because of what these organizations and their members do, Texas consistently ranks the number one state in almost every business category, Abbott said. We are the number one state of affordable production of oil and gas. Texas has ranked number one for doing business ever since I became governor. Texas has been the number one state for the most economic expansion of any other state. Towards the end of the event, Governor took a few questions from the media, including possible concerns about the upcoming winter storm expected this week, with snow expected Thursday. It has been a year since the 2021 winter storm knocked power out all across the state. Abbott says the state is more prepared this year, saying there is about 15% more capacity than last year. In addition to that, we have more power reserves than we had last year, Abbott said. We also have required winterization of all power generation facilities. 99% of all power generation facilities in the state of Texas have passed inspection to make sure that those power producers will be reliable and be able to generate power. There are more natural gas facilities that are designated as critical infrastructure this year to ensure the ongoing operation. Amazingly, last year, ERCOT actually shut down power to the natural gas facilities in regions across the entire state. That hindered our ability to get natural gas from those entities. Last winter, only 60 facilities were designated as critical infrastructure. Today, more than 1,500 are designated as critical infrastructure. That means there will be no power shutdowns to those facilities, many that are oil and gas sectors. Wednesday's high will be 48 with a low of 23, with snow expected as the temperatures begin to plummet. Thursday's temperature will be even colder with a high of 27 and a low of 16. Friday is expecting sunny skies, but only a high of 36 with a low of 10. Saturday and Sunday are expected to be the same. The grid is expected to hit peak demand in the early morning hours on Friday, Abbott said. It was projected that at that peak demand time, there will be a surplus of power of about 13,000 megawatts of power. That's a large amount of power. Also, there are now alternative sources of power at the power generators that, if they were to run out of natural gas, they'll have other sources of natural power to generate electricity. UTPB Alumni Giving Back to University by Ruth Campbell. A graduate of University of Texas Permian Basin, Athenia Oldham, has always loved science. Now she's back at her alma mater as an associate professor of biology and chair of the biology department. Oldham, who grew up in Midland, went to Midland College on a 2-year scholarship. She went on to earn a bachelor's and master's degree in biology from UTPB and her PhD in cell biology from the University of Oklahoma Health Science Center. Initially, she wanted to be a doctor, but then realized she didn't. Dr. Douglas Henderson, one of her professors at UTPB, told her she could do research and teach, So that's what she's wound up doing. I teach general biology for freshmen, and there I teach graduate courses, and there are molecular biology, virology, and immunology, Oldham said. It seems people have become more interested in those fields in the last couple of years. Odom has been teaching at UTPB since the fall of 2015 and says she has enjoyed her return. All of my previous professors are now my colleagues, and we had a great relationship when I was a student. We still have a really great relationship as colleagues, she said. There are 9 professors in the department, including yourself. Odom said they work closely together. Dr. Henderson, he was my mentor when I was as a student here, so the projects that we work on now, we collaborate on, she said. Odom said she liked biology even as a youngster. But again, initially, I thought I wanted to go to medical school. But then working with Dr. Henderson, it was a lot of fun because he would take me to conferences every year. The conferences were always in big cities, so she got to travel, which she enjoyed. She recently got over the hurdle of going up for tenure and promotion, so Oldham experienced some anxiety about that. But I like working with the faculty in my department because they're all nice. They all respect each other. We all get along really well. That's not always the case, so I really like that. She and her husband, Robert Walker, met when they were students at UTPB. He works for the physical plant at the university. They have a bunny, and she is planning to get some turtles at some point this spring from Dr. Henderson. Quick hits. Free drive-through COVID-19 test. Due to expected inclement weather conditions, the COVID-19 testing sites at First Street and Grant Avenue and UTPB Park will be closed on Thursday and Friday of this week. Each location is an outdoor drive-through location. This closure is for the safety of the public and staff members. If you have an appointment scheduled for one of these days, you will be contacted to reschedule. Testing will resume Saturday for UTPB Park and Monday for First Street and Grant Avenue. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. today and resume Monday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, tests will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with Docs Health, has scheduled a drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday, Saturday through next week at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located at the 191 Access Road, 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR test and rapid antigen test available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket costs. No appointments needed. However, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of materials. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be a 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your results via text message. To pre-register, visit docshealthtesting.com. Pay increase announced for all Harmony Public Schools substitute teachers by OA News. Substitute teachers can earn up to an additional $600 per month on top of current compensations beginning February 14th. After giving across-the-board pay raises to full-time teachers and campus staff earlier this school year, Harmony Public Schools will now be giving pay raises to all levels of substitute teachers. The daily rate increase goes into effect February 14th and was approved unanimously by the Harmony Public School Boards of Directors on January 29th. Under the rate increase, substitute teachers will earn an extra $20 to $30 per day on top of the already competitive Harmony rate, a news release said. For a teacher only working a few days per week, the increase will mean a few hundred dollars each month on top of the compensation they already earn. For certified teachers and long-term substitutes, the rate increase could mean up to $600 per month in increased pay. Each day, substitute teachers are making a major impact on our schools by keeping our students on track and learning when their regular teachers are unable to attend school, Harmony CEO Faith Ai says. These professionals are important members of our school community, and we want to show our thanks. Harmony currently has substitute teaching opportunities at all of its campuses statewide. Earlier this school year, Harmony also announced $4,000 to $7,500 in additional annual compensation for teachers and other school staff. The increase was the third occasion in the past two school years in which Harmony announced a major improvement to employee compensation and benefits. In January 2021, Harmony announced a sweeping upgrade of its employer-paid benefits that provided free vision and dental plans to all full-time employees, introduced matching retirement plan contributions for 403B and 457B participants, and increased life insurance payouts from $20,000 to $100,000. Harmony Public Schools is a Texas-born, Texas-wide public charter school system with campuses serving pre-K grade 12 students in 23 cities across the state. Harmony Public Schools is currently accepting applications for the 2022-2023 school year for both students and team members. Friday Night Lights Star in Jail by OA News. Former Permian High School running back James Boobie Miles, who was made famous in H.G. Buzz Blissinger's Friday Night Lights book, is in the Ector County Jail accused of failing to register as a sex offender. Court records detail Miles was sentenced to 5 years in prison in January 2020 after pleading guilty to aggravated sexual assault. Miles, 51, had been indicted in August 2015 in connection with a June 1999 assault. Court records indicate he was given credit for 3 years' time served. It's not clear when he was released from prison, but one of the terms of his plea agreement was that he had to register as a sex offender upon his release. Miles was prominently featured in Blissinger's book about the Panthers' 1988 season, a book that made the New York Times bestseller list and was later made into a movie. Miles played at Ranger College the following year. He has also served time in prison for violating probation related to an aggravated assault charge. Nusuro groundbreaking likely at end of March by Kim Smith. Nusuro is still on track to start construction on its $7 billion natural gas to gasoline plant in Pinwheel this quarter, Nusuro Chief Operating Officer Hal Buchnight told Odessa City Council members Tuesday. Although they had originally planned to have a groundbreaking ceremony a bit earlier, Buchnight said it looks as though the ceremony will now be held at the end of March in order to accommodate Governor Greg Abbott's schedule. There has been a lot going on behind the scenes since he last spoke with them in November, Buchnight said during the council's work session Tuesday. They're in the process of negotiating contracts with a public company that intends to buy 100,000 barrels of gas per day from Nacero with a solar company they'll be purchasing power from and with an LPG gas company, Buchnight said. All of those agreements are expected to be completed by the end of February or March, he said. In addition, Buchnight said they'll be selecting a new general contractor by early March, too. 27 contractors have expressed interest in the project, and they've been whittled down to 6, he said. In the past, Nacero's representatives have said the construction phase will require 3,500 workers, and the plant will employ 350 when it becomes operational. On Tuesday, Buchnight said they are actively taking names. We're looking for contractors in the area. We have a database right now of probably 100 to 200 contractors in the area, the Permian Basin, that would be interested in supporting the project in a number of ways, Buchnight said. There's 26 major contractors that are located in the region here. Some big, some medium-sized, some selective, like electrical. They all will put their qualifications in, and when we've selected the general contractors, we're breaking up the packages, we will go out to local contractors. Once they break ground, Buchnight told the council they'll begin cleaning up the site, which has 45 to 50 wells on it, some of which are no longer operating and were simply covered up before there were Texas Railroad Commission requirements. Those have been located using aerial photos, he said. They'll be looking for leaks, and their intention is to clean them up as they go along, he said. In addition, Nacero has negotiated with several pipeline companies to move their pipelines off the property and remediate any leakage, he said. We're trying to start by taking care of the issues that are legacy issues and clean it up, Buchnight said. Nacero wants to build out Texas, and their investors are behind them. So be proud for the facility that we're going to build here, because it's going to be the model and the example and the anchor facility that will anchor a large business for Nacero in Texas, he said. Odessan dies in two vehicle wreck by OA News. A 37-year-old Odessa man died after troopers say he was involved in a two-vehicle collision in Winkler County. A press release from the Department of Public Safety detailed the reported fatal collision happened at 1:33 p.m. January 31st on State Highway 302, about 4 miles east of Kermit. Alex Soto Martinez Jr., 37, of Odessa, was driving a 2012 Mack truck tractor with trailer, while Moran Comunis Cervanto, 40, of Jal, New Mexico, was driving a 2006 Kentworth truck tractor with trailer. Preliminary information showed the Mack truck tractor was traveling east on State Highway 302, the press release stated. The roadway is under construction and traffic had come to a stop. Troopers say the Kentworth truck tractor was traveling west on State Highway 302. The Mack truck tractor failed to see traffic was stopped ahead, and to avoid rear-ending another vehicle, the vehicle veered into the westbound lane where it sideswiped the Kentworth truck tractor. Martinez was pronounced dead by Justice of the Peace Glenda Mixon at the scene, the press release stated. Martinez and Cervanto were both wearing their seatbelts. Cervanto wasn't injured in the collision. Obituaries. Sylvia L. Clark, Odessa. Sylvia May LaCour Clark, age 97, peacefully died on January 25, 2022, surrounded by family which she so dearly loved. She was preceded in death by her beloved husband, Hollis, 23 years ago, and continued to marshal through as her seven children continued to grow the family tree. She was born August 22, 1924, in Merrillville, Louisiana, to Joseph Wilfred LaCour and Annette Octavie Maricott on a small farm. Sylvia is survived by Christina Wright of San Angelo, Texas, Minka and Scott Silbert, Holly and Wayne Perkins, Carmen and Mike Randolph, and LaCour Clark, all of Odessa, Texas, Robbins and Ann Clark of Houston, and Kevin and Carlene Clark of Westminster, Colorado, as well as 16 grandchildren, 22 great-grandchildren, and 2 great-great-grandchildren. The family would be honored that in lieu of flowers, a donation be made to the Alzheimer's Association St. Elizabeth and Seton Building Fund, or Smile Train. Sylvia will be interred at a private burial in Odessa, followed by a memorial mass and a celebration of life at a later date. Jesse Gonzalez Mesa, Round Rock, Texas. Jesse G. Mesa, 90, of Fort Stockton, Texas, reunited peacefully with our Lord and Savior on Friday, January 28th, in Round Rock, Texas. Visitation will be held from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Wednesday, February 2nd, at Eternity Funeral Home Chapel. Visitation will continue at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish, St. Agnes Catholic Church, at 6 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, February 3rd. Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish, St. Agnes Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Fort Stockton Catholic Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Eternity Funeral Home. Jesse was born in Fort Stockton, Texas on March 16, 1931, to Juan Gonzalez and Eliza Bernard. Jesse and her beloved husband, Lucas F. Mesa, Sr., were married on July 4, 1950. Jesse is preceded in death by her parents, husband, Lucas F. Mesa, Sr., brothers Pedro Gonzalez, I.B. Isero Gonzalez, Froilo Gonzalez, Manuel Emmanuel Gonzalez, sisters Guadalupe Urias, Emma Ramirez, Alicia Valenzuela, and Francis Casas. Jesse is survived by her sons Lucas and Frida Mesa, Jr., and Gilbert G. Mesa, daughters Grace Ella Franco, Linda Sue and Joe Gonzalez, Ramilio and Salvador Rodriguez, sisters Dorothy and Jimmy Stokes, and Reyes Sanchez, 14 grandchildren, 14 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandson. Death notices. Lloyd Oren Fitz, Sr., Odessa. Lloyd Oren Fitz, Sr., 86, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 27th in Odessa. Chapel service is scheduled for 10 a.m. February 4th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following at Sunset Memorial Gardens. arrangements are by American Heritage Funeral Home of Midland. Tommy Wayne Thomason, Odessa. Tommy Wayne Thomason, 84 of Odessa, died Monday, January 24th. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. Saturday, February 5th at Calvary Baptist Church. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.